Welcome back, Family Twist listeners. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Stolz, and Kendall and I are ready to dive into part two of Brian Stanton's story. I'll keep this brief because you want to get into the twist of this right away.
And then my relationship with my adoptive mom changed too, because she suddenly became defensive, even though she was instrumental in finding my birth mother. My birth mother came out visiting me in Los Angeles in the summer of 98, and my adoptive mother was like, "What? What are you doing?" I'm like, "Well, we're getting to know each other." "Why?" I'm like, "Mom, you're the one who helped connect us. What are you talking about?" "Oh, I just thought you wanted, you know, medical information and just, you know, that's it. And then that's it. You move on. Why do you need a relationship with it?" You know, so it became very defensive for many years. And I invited my birth mother to our wedding, my wife and I's wedding, which my adoptive mother was like, "Why? Why are you doing this? You don't even know her." And I'm like, "Well, that's
exactly.
You get to know her and she's my mother." So it was that for a year. And finally, you guys, I just called my adoptive mom and I said, "Mom, I'm exhausted. I cannot walk on eggshells anymore around this topic with you. I need you to be my mother and support me in this.
Yeah.
This is where I need you most as a parent. Support me.
Yeah.
Because whether you like it or not, I want a relationship with my birth mother. And I want my kids to have a relationship with my birth mother. And if you don't like that and you don't support me, I'm hurt, but I'm still going to do it. But I would really love to have your motherly love and support on this." And she cried, and that was a great conversation.
Mm-hmm. Brian,
But it's hard for us to do, right, Kendall? Because we feel so guilty. We don't want to ruffle any feathers again.
Right.
You know, we don't want to...
Right.
For our adoptive family, we don't want to, you know, I'm not... looking for another family, you know.
Yeah. You're always having to explain yourself, I think. But yeah, my story's a little bit different just because my adoptive parents were already gone. I knew that they were supportive of my search, but, you know, I didn't live through. I don't know if it really would have gone that way if they were living. You know, I mean, I don't know. My adoptive father's second wife was very supportive. She knew how much I wanted to find. In fact, there was, before we did the DNA test, there was a like rumor around my hometown that they might have thought they knew who my birth mother was, which was just all bogus. But my stepmother was instrumental in trying to help me find that woman. And I did find her. And then suddenly found out that she was not my birth mother. But it's so interesting because I did really have all that support behind the scenes. And
it's great.
Yeah. And
it's great.
I've always been, I said I had a lot of fortitude that I think my living through a lot brought to me. But sometimes I could be like the bull in the china shop, like, "Stand back. This is my story. You sit down and shut up and I'm going to do what I'm going to do." You know, I can definitely be that way sometimes. Corey will attest. You know, it probably comes from self-preservation, but part of it just has to be part of your personality as well. Like, can be very demonstrative and to a fault sometimes.
Absolutely.
So, Brian, I think I heard you correctly refer to your adoptive mother in the past tense.
Oh, yes. We lost her in 2020, not of COVID, but of other health issues. And
And how were you? How was your relationship when she passed?
It was the same. It had its ups and downs. I don't feel like I left anything unsaid. Okay. But yeah, we'd blow up at each other a lot. And we did blow up probably a few months before that happened, before she passed. But we had a phone call about it.
Sure.
It was a complicated relationship, but we also had great time. I'm not, you know, I don't mean to say that, you know, it was such a, she was a fine mom, but we did. It was just complicated.
Sure.
That's all. Yeah. That's all. I poked her a lot. I poked her. I was like, "You still love me? You love me now? You love me? You still love me? You still love me? Are you going to let me go too? Are you going to get rid of me?"
Right.
Yeah. So I did that. And there were things that she didn't understand. She never really was on board with the whole theater thing. Mm. She came out and visited me out here while I was at CalArts, and she said to me, she said, "Brian, I'll admit, I always just had hoped it was a hobby, that it was just going to be a hobby. And she said, we just don't know anything about this field and we have no idea how to help. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's the thing. I'm like, well, you know, you could have told me this when I was 13,
right.
Like, you know, instead of have this come out in other ways, in other controlling ways. But it was very beautiful and very human. And, you know, our parents do the best they can. And she wanted the best for me and was trying to push me down this other way. Yeah. But she literally admitted, and it was beautiful to hear.
Yeah, it's cathartic.
She didn't know how to. It is.
For sure.
It is.
Yeah. Did your birth mother have any other children?
Yeah, two boys. Oh. So I've, one of them's name is Brian.
Interesting.
She had no idea that my name was Brian. That synchronicity pops up a lot.
Interesting.
In the adoption world. I met them back then. We don't really have an ongoing relationship. We're just in two completely different worlds. Mm-hmm. I've met them and talked to them. We just don't keep up. I'd love to. I get updates from her and stuff. But yeah. On my father's side, though, I did find my father.
That was my next. But, yeah, that was my. I had a feeling. That was my next question.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, I mean, it's from what you've shared with us, the one thing that we know about him right now. I got to hear a little bit more.
So my mom, when she saw me, she thought she knew who the father was. She said there were three boys, but could only remember two names. And for the incident at the party. But she said, I look a lot like this one guy who happens to be in federal prison for drug trafficking.
Oh, wow.
And and laundering. Crazy story, but I won't go all that. I don't need to know him. I don't want to know anything about him, right? I don't need it. That's fine. She's like, he's probably dangerous, but if you want my help, I can help you and give you any information that I know and stuff like that. She showed me his picture in the yearbook. But I was like, nah. So while I was performing Blank, so this is, 12 years later, and I was learning what adoption really means to me, I was like, you know what? The truth of this is important. I need to seek out, my paternal side, my biological paternal side. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. This is a long story. And my film at Ghost Kingdom is all about this journey. You guys, I wrote another play called At Ghost Kingdom with the symbol at, that takes a magnifying glass to the search for biological relatives. And it was originally a play, and I was slated to do an off-Broadway performance in October of 2020. Mm-hmm. And we all know that COVID closed theaters. So I knew that if I put that script on the shelf, I wouldn't go back to it. It takes so much energy. And while I was already in rehearsals with my director, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to film this. I'll make it more intimate. I'm not going to film it on a stage, but I'll film it in my apartment and just kind of make it a little more camera friendly, but keep the theatricality, mm-hmm. the theatrical language of it, right? Just less physical, more close up. So, but keep it simple. So I did. And that's what At Ghost Kingdom was. And the past few years I've, gone to conferences and had screenings. I got into a few film festivals and stuff like that. Cool. Side note, The Ghost Kingdom, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that term. B.J. Lifton, who wrote the book Lost and Found, The Adoption Experience, and Journey of the Adopted Self, which is one of my favorite books about adoption, she coined the term The Ghost Kingdom, which is the spectral place in the psyche that we all go to with our fantasies about who our mother is and who our father is and who we would have been if we were with them. All those fantasies, that's where our fantasies live in the ghost kingdom. We have all these ghosts. And of course, the mothers have the fantasies of their ghost children. And that really resonated with me because, man, I lived in a fantasy world, I tell you. Wish my perfect biological movie star of a mother would come save me. Or, if I was ever angry, she's probably just some druggy, trailer trash, blah, blah, blah. I mean, these horrible fantasies, right? And when we decide to search, we literally step into the ghost kingdom and humanize those ghosts. Mm. It's us trying to meet our infant selves and, humanize that part of us. Anyway, so that's where the ghost kingdom comes from. Yeah, so I went journey. I was looking for this guy. I made a relationship with his daughter who helped put us in touch. And I talked to this guy. He was in federal prison. He didn't say it was rape, but he certainly said that night happened. Mm. But listen, I'll go to bat for my mom and any woman anytime, because I know high school guys, you know, mm-hmm. it happens horribly enough. Anyway, that's not me. That's between my mother and them. We finally got a test, or a way to do a test. They wouldn't let me send a swab into prison. Mm. I called the DNA company, and they said, you know what? If he can send you fingernails, we can compare, and if we're able to scrape enough DNA off the nails, we can compare it with your swab, with your cheek swab. I was like, fingernail, like, do you want hair too? And they're like, actually, you'd have to get a lot of hair to get the samples that we need. So it's fingernails. So I emailed him, and he said, fingernails? How about blood on a diabetic stick? And I was like, blood on a diabetic stick? They won't let me send you a Q-tip? They'll let you send me blood on a I don't understand. But I called the DNA. They said, no, there won't be enough blood. Just if you can get a fingernail. So he said, I'll send you both. I was like, fabulous. What a day at the mailbox.
Exactly.
For fingernails
exactly.
And blood on a diabetic stick.
Oh, my God.
So I got it, sent it in. He's not my father.
Oh.
He's not my father.
Hmm.
So the guy that I look like and was kind of the ringer of this incident is not my father. And I was talking with that family. Most of the family didn't want to have anything to do with me because I had publicity about blank. And they're like, he's saying you're a rapist and stuff. Like, it was horrible.
Yeah, right.
It was horrible and so hard. But his daughter was so lovely and embraced me and took me in and, you know, was so helpful. And I developed this year and a half long, almost 2 years long relationship with her. And now
not
she's become a ghost.
Yeah.
You know, so I told my mom, I was like, Maya, he's not my dad. And she's like, oh, well, I don't think you're the other guy, because he was like this really big guy with a huge head and he was a police officer. You just don't look anything like him, but I guess you could be his. But I did end up dating someone about a month after the event, and we all thought you were his because that's who I was dating, and I became pregnant at that time. That's when I found out I was pregnant. So let me put you in touch with this guy. And I was like, okay, but does the timing work out? And she said, I don't think it does, because as your due date became more clear, that's when I realized it was probably from the incident at high school. Mm-hmm. You know, the rape. And I was like, okay, listen, I'll go down any path. Like, let's do this. And so she puts me in touch with this guy. He always thought I was his son. He's like, I've been waiting for this phone call. I've been waiting to hear from you for, you know, this was back in 2016-ish. Wow. You know, however old I was, I've been waiting for, you know, 42 years, whatever. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, her family took me into a church. Yeah, they were all Catholic Italians. They took me into this church and made me sign you away and relinquish any rights to you, and made me promise I would not pursue Beth anymore. And I was like, what? And he said, but in the meantime, I told my wife before I married her that I have a son out there. I told my two daughters that I have a son out there. So I was this guy's ghost for 40 some odd years. And I'm like, what? This would be amazing. And he said, well, I tell you, if he said, I didn't know about the rape. I didn't know about the rape, but I sure do hope you're mine. Oh. I hope you're my son. I mean, we've all been waiting for you. And we get together with these big family dinners all the time. And I tell you, you have a space at our dinner table anytime you want. And I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And we did the test. Not my
hell. Oh, no.
Because the timing didn't work out. It was after. So I had to call this guy and break his heart. Something that he has been holding on to for all these years.
Thinking, that it was real.
And tell him I'm not his son. Mm. And then I pursued the other guy who was the big police officer, who, by the way, my mother was at a Little League baseball game, my birth mother, and she was going to the bathroom. And she heard someone calling her name, and she looked over, and it was the police officer, and he was in the squad car, and he was one of the boys that night. And
she, you know, frightened, tightened up. And he said, I just want to apologize for what happened back in high school. I just want to apologize for that. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty amazing. My mother told me that. Anyway, his family didn't want anything to do with me. I talked to who would have been my half-brother, who would have been my half-sister, blah, blah, blah. And I really kind of had to put it to bed, you guys. I was so exhausted. It had been, I had been searching really hardcore for like 6 straight years and just having these really difficult conversations with, you know, possible family members. And I had to bury it. I had to come to terms, like Kendall, like you are with your mother. We find these ways to come to terms with moving on and not knowing certain information. And I said, you know what I'll do? I'll put a bunch of information on Ancestry.com, 23andMe, Family Tree, DNA, you know, all those things. And if anything pops up, fine. But I am a father now, and I need to be a father, you know, all this stuff. I just had to come to terms with it, right? Anyway, to make a very long, complicated DNA story short, I met an angel who was related to me, came up as first cousin, and we were trying to figure out how we were related, try to find this Kansas City connection. His name is John, and he said, Brian, his wife was the one that was helping me, actually, who I wasn't related to, but I was related to her husband, John. Like, Brian, we think you may be John's nephew. And here's why. John's father, who we think could be your grandfather, moved the kids to Sedalia, Missouri, which is right outside of Kansas City, and worked for the Ford Edsel Company in the 50s. He had an affair with a woman, another married woman, who also worked for the Ford Edsel Company. She became pregnant, told John's father, who would be my grandfather. He came clean to his wife, saying, I had an affair, she's pregnant. His wife said, well, I'm moving back to Illinois with my family. You could either come back with your family and be with your 4 children, or you could be with this other woman who's married and is carrying your child, your choice. And of course, he skipped out back to Illinois to be with his family. And they said, Brian, we think that woman's child is your father. And I was like, okay, well, I'm never going to find this guy. Like, he was probably given up for adoption. Like, he's, you know, product of an affair. Right. I kept looking, but they sent me a picture of who would be my grandfather. Looks just like me. I mean, sent me 2 photos, and I look just like him. Like, my wife was like, oh, this is your biological family. This is your father's side of family, without a doubt. So they gave me a name, but some of the letters were wrong, so I was going down all these rabbit holes. Some of these names start popping up on 23andMe, and I'm like, who are these names? And I was in touch with another person on 23andMe. We were like second cousins. And I said, you're connected to these guys. Who are these people? They said, oh, yeah, this woman actually, I think, is from Kansas City. That may be the connection. You're definitely connected to me on your father's side, so this may be it. So I looked up these names, and I followed them on Facebook, and I got this woman's name. The year matches up. She had passed, and she had 4 children, 3 daughters and 1 son. And I was like, I was trying to see if she gave anyone away for adoption or anything like that. And so I connected them all. And in Facebook, all 4 of those children are on Facebook. So I send them messages. But they are the older generation, and if you're not connected through with Facebook, sometimes you just don't get those messages, or they don't know how to get the messages. The son had an email, a business email. So I was like, fuck it, I'll send it, you know, I'll send the exact same message on that email. He responded the next day and he said, I'm happy to help you any way I can. I know some of these DNA stories can be a little confusing and lead us in wrong directions, but I'm happy to help you anyway. Why don't we just start with your mother's name and where she was from, any information that you can give me? And I said, my mother's name is this. She went to this high school. I was conceived April, May of 1974, born February 4th of 1975. There you go. He emailed back and he said, I knew your mother. I went to high school with her. We went on a date, a double date, late April, early May of 1974. I'm happy to do a DNA test, whatever you need. Wow. And I fell out of my chair. I knew it. I knew it. I didn't even need the test. Like, I knew it. I was like, oh, This was 10 years of hardcore searching, and of course, even longer dealing with this rape thing in my head. This guy has nothing to do with the rape at all. Nothing to do with it. So for 24, 25 years, I had thought I was a product of rape, and, you know, I was talking with groups and emotionally processing. I asked him, I said, Rick, he's very open. In fact, if you guys want to, we can come back, the two of us, and do an interview.
Oh, that'd be cool.
You know, if you want. Later on, he's very open. I said, Rick, do you mind if, when I get the results, if I call you in person, you know, go beyond email? And he said, absolutely. He said, and just so you know, I've been sharing everything with my wife. And I was like, oh, thank God, I'm not a secret. You know, and I was like, I'm thrilled. And he said, listen, I know it sounds like you've been through the ringer here. If it turns out I'm not your father, I'm happy to be a sounding board for you. But if I am, we have a lot to talk about. And came in 99.9999999%. And I said, you're my dad. And he said, well, I love you and I'm proud of you.
That's amazing.
And it's so beautiful to hear. That's all. Like, he could have hung up after that. I was fine.
Yep.
But it was just all those emotions of dealing with it, you know. It was just such a beautiful moment. And we have a relationship now. He came out to visit. He stays in touch with my daughters, texts them all the time. I went and stayed at their house. I have a half sister through him who is involved in the theater.
Of course.
And his mom, who was my grandma, was on track to be a professional singer and then got tuberculosis. So performance is there.
Yeah.
My half-sister lives in New York, Manhattan, and my half-brother lives in Houston, along with my father. My father lives in Houston, too. He was a Division I athlete, baseball, and my father was a Division I athlete, Jayhawk, for tennis.
Wow.
And my daughter is a Division I athlete for volleyball. So all that, like all this stuff was just coming out. And Rick accompanied me for the conference last year, the first Untangling Our Roots conference. Was Kendall, you're going this year? Is that what?
Yep.
Yay, we can meet.
I know.
Give you a big personal hug then. And he came and you know, he's been learning so much about this world, because not only did he find out that he was a birth father, I was the one to reveal to him that he's also an NPE.
Mm-hmm.
He did not know that he was a product of an affair.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of fishing when we were talking, like, does he know? Because I called John and his wife, Sharon, who helped me find him, who gave me that information. I said, I found him. They're like, oh, they were elated. Like, they'd been looking for him. They knew they had a brother out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so I connected them.
Hmm.
And they live in Houston as well. So they live 30 minutes from
each other.
It's amazing. Wow. I know. And so I told John, I said, John, he doesn't know about his father. And he goes, no, he has to know. He has to know. They brought him as an infant over to their house saying, you need to take care of your son or something like that. When you talk to my father, he can explain that better. But I was like, he doesn't know. And I know. And I'm all about transparency in this world. I feel it my duty and responsibility to reveal this. You need to tell me everything you know about that story. Yeah. And he said, okay, here it is. Rick and I had just had a Zoom conversation, and he said, great talking to you. And I'm happy to do it whenever on your time. Happy to do it whenever you want. And I said, well, why don't we do it tomorrow? And he said, okay. And so we did it, and I said, Rick, I have some information I feel it my duty to tell you. And I told him the whole Fort Edsel story and the affair. And I said, Rick, I think you are that boy who was born, that your mother was the woman who had the affair with him. And he said, okay, I don't really know what to do with that information. I said, you could do whatever you want. I just feel it my duty to tell you, if you want to confirm this and look it up, I'll go on that journey with you. I'll help you. I'm right here. I get it. If you want to sit with it, sit with it. I'll be here for you too. You know, it's huge info. He confirmed it, and he ended up doing a 23andMe DNA test, which doubly confirmed our relationship, but also that relationship. And my father is an NPE as well. So he found out within the span of just a couple weeks that, all that.
Did he know?
Talk about family twist.
Yeah. Did your birth father know that your birth mother was even pregnant? Or?
Oh. Yes. Okay. Yes. He had heard at the time when she was actually dating that guy. So she thought I was her boyfriend's. Mm-hmm. Which later turned into, oh, maybe it came from that incident, the rape, because of my due date.
Right.
But he called and said, hey, I hear you may be pregnant. Is it mine? You know? And she said, no, it's not yours. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So I called my mom and I said, Ma, found my father. And she said, oh. Mm-hmm. And I said the name. And she's like, and I said the name again. She's like, I don't know that name. Mm. And I said, do you want me to send you a picture?
Yeah.
This is it. And she said, no, I'll just go look at my yearbook. She can't recall it. She doesn't recall that name. Mm. And so here I am harboring a little anger and disappointment because I went down a hell of a fucking ride.
Yeah.
But she was probably still going.
And I don't blame her.
At that time.
Absolutely, and I don't blame her at all.
Yeah.
I know, but I was just, you know, my emotions initially came up. No, and I'm going to talk to that point, Corey. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Horrible time for her. Horrible time. Here's a woman who was violated and then was trying to also reclaim her sexuality, mm-hmm. right? And pregnant.
Right.
In an Italian Catholic family. Right. All that. Yeah. Horrible. Why parents wanted to send her away. I mean, we can't. So I get all that. But then I still had the feelings like, well, fuck. You know? And I talked to a real close mother friend of mine, a birth mother, who has a child, a daughter that I'm also friends with in the adoption community. And she was date raped. That was a date rape incident. So I was very close with her. And I said, I found my father. And she was elated. I said, Beth doesn't remember. She doesn't remember. And she's like, Brian, let me tell you something. She said, I was pregnant with my daughter. You know, and, you know, the date rape happened. I became pregnant. And that whole time period, I was pregnant when JFK was assassinated. And she said, you ask anybody. They know exactly where they were when they got that mm-hmm. news. She said, Brian, I don't even recall him being shot.
Wow.
I have no recollection of any assassination.
Wow.
And she said that the trauma runs so deep. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of healing to do.
For sure. Wow. I mean, it in some ways, it's amazing and helpful when the body can do that, you know, to protect mm-hmm. you.
I know. Yeah.
Protect
right.
you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it goes into protection mode, yep. right? For that moment. But then... How do we approach it later?
Exactly.
How do we approach that later?
Because we get so suppressed. You know? Yep.
Yeah. And after the moment. And how can we be better as a community to help people?
Remove the stigma, right? Remove the stigma.
Remove it.
Yep.
Remove it, yep. man. Yeah. There's nothing to be ashamed
no.
of. These things happen.
Absolutely.
We could put our opinions on it. We could put religious dogma on it. We could put, you know, social structures on it. We could put all this shit on it. But you know what? At the end of the day, this thing happened. Mm-hmm. Let's deal with it rather than hide it, rather than shame it, rather than suppress it.
Because it might have been that one day. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it was just one, you know.
Yeah.
One odd day. And, you know, it can affect you for the rest of your life. I mean, when I think about these poor... especially mothers, you know, who are dealing with the ongoing guilt and the ongoing torment. It's just sad.
Right.
So.
No, it is. We're human beings just having experiences, and we're all in the same boat. We're all having experiences. And the more we talk about it, the more we understand each other, mm-hmm. the more we can support each other, the more we can, you know, embrace each other and embrace ourselves,
right.
yeah. embrace our own right. stories. There's nothing wrong with us. We're just having a human experience.
Exactly.
Life happens. That's it. You know?
Life happens, without a doubt.
It just does.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, thank you for mentioning the Untangling Our Roots conference.
Yes. Yeah, it's two organizations.
Yes.
National Association of Adoptees and Parents and the Right to Know. So it's, they're coming together, adoptee constellation, as well as NPPs and donor conceived. It's fabulous. Fabulous.
So this will be the first time that Family Twist will be, you know, live at one of these events. And I know it's going to be really healing for Kendall. It's going to be a lot. I think it's going to be a lot because I think there's maybe like 8 to 10 of our former guests are going to be there.
Great.
And it's so, I'm trying really hard to make it happen that I can be there too. We have 7 pets, and so like pet care is a little challenging.
You have 7 pets?
We have 5 tiny dogs.
Yes.
And 2 cats.
Two of them are with us right now. They're the podcast pups. They're, because they're still the quietest.
You guys.
But I'm working on it. Yes. We've got a dog sitter that comes over.
Two of our 3 cats. We have 3 cats. Mm. And 2 of them are.
I saw one behind you.
Not close to 7.
But yeah, I really want to be there just because I want to be able to experience it as much as possible and then just be there to support them and, you know, meet people, things like that. But it's like, it's going to be a lot, you know, to take in over just a few days. Mm-hmm. So how was it for you last year?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot, but you're going to love it, Kendall.
Good.
Great. It was great. So I screened at Ghost Kingdom there last year. And that was wonderful because also my birth father came. So I was able to introduce him. So Ed Goes Kingdom, I wrote that before I found my father.
Yeah.
So it ends with me coming to terms, which is more realistic for a lot of people. Sure. But it ends with me coming to terms that I may never know my father, and how do I move forward with that? Spoiler alert. But I was, after that experience, I answered some questions, and then I said, so I want to introduce you all to someone. And I told him the quick story and introduced my father. So he came up and we fielded questions together. It was a beautiful moment. And I've known a few people who go to these conferences with their birth parent. Mm. I always loved it. And I learned so much from both of them, especially the mothers. I learned so much from the mothers. And now I'm that person with his father there. And, you know, hopefully we can help people out that helped me the same way. But he's still learning a lot, too. But Kendall, you're going to meet a lot of great brothers and sisters there. It's just fantastic.
Well,
we're a good family. It's, you just think something and you know exactly what they're going to say, you know, or you're on the same page. Mm-hmm. We speak the same language.
I'm such an emotional person that Corey's right when I could use him there. I'm so emotional in general. I can cry at the drop of a hat, but.
Well, Kendall's half-sister, who we found on his birth mother's side, is doing a traveling nurse gig in Boston.
Yeah.
And she said if she happens to be available, you know, that weekend, that she will come over and stay with the critters. So fingers crossed there. And
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So just kind of, it's so funny that, like, we're both able to be there because, you know, Kendall's found family is taking care of our babies.
Exactly. And
fabulous.
It's been amazing to have her near anyway.
Yeah.
We live about 80 miles north of Boston. So it's been fantastic to get to spend time with her. And she came over and spent a weekend with us. And, you know, so it's just, and she's a really, really great person. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's great. I love her.
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah.
And that's great you have her, right? And the relationship with your sister on your mother's side. Mm-hmm.
Or it is.
And you also know your mother's sister. Right?
I do.
And your mother's sister.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean that's
I think that's definitely great. Helped with some of the healing, because it's like, while he doesn't have that with his birth mother, he and his sister are so ridiculously close and have so much in common, or just like, and they just glow when they're in the same room.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
beautiful.
She's fantastic.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And she's embraced me so well, you know.
I mean, that's another journey too, the siblings, right? The half siblings. I do have a good relationship with my new half brother and half sister. We text each other, and I went to both of their weddings.
Oh, very cool.
That's awesome.
Like a year after I reunited, but that's a whole nother journey too, you know. And I assure everyone, you know, I'm like, on your time. We don't need to be best friends. We don't. I'd love to talk to you once at least, just to say hi, but on your terms, you know, because they also just found out that their grandfather isn't their biological grandfather, and their grandmother, who they held on a pedestal, had an affair.
Yeah.
But she's human. Yeah. She was going through a lot that time, which, you know, that'd be Rick's. Rick can talk about that. But so they have their own journey, you know, and now I'm the, you know, the oldest sibling is no longer the oldest sibling.
Yeah.
You know, there's all this stuff that, you know, that anyone connected to adoption feels and goes through.
Yeah.
It's just best to be open and honest and supportive. That's all.
Because Kendall definitely bulldozed his way to a couple situations.
I just, that's kind of.
Good for you, Kendall.
I just could, you know, I didn't find these people until I was 47, and I wasn't waiting one more minute. I'm like, what if something happens to any of us? You know what I mean? Like, this has to happen now.
Yeah.
This moment, you know?
Yes, yes. And it's your right to.
Absolutely.
We have every right to search for our biological.
Absolutely.
I'm all for privacy. You know, everybody has a right to privacy. Just not everybody has a right to be anonymous to their biological child.
Right.
I just, that makes no sense.
I know.
Right? So we definitely have our right.
Yep.
Yeah. So good.
I don't know if I've ever mentioned on the podcast before, but my mother and father, my adoptive parents, were very open to an open adoption or, you know, a closed. It just so happened that because they went through the state only supported private adoptions back then. So it wasn't, they really weren't given an option to have like none of the children that they would have encountered would have been part of an open adoption setting, you know? They wanted that for me. They wanted, you know, for any child, I remember them saying, it's every baby's right to know where they came from.
You know, when my adoptive mother had that information, I immediately was like, if I had been asking my whole life about my mother, how long have you had this information? Mm-hmm. You know, you thought suddenly I was emotionally ready to handle this information at 23 years old?
Right.
Like, why?
I know.
Like, clearly I was asking. You know, and meet people where they're at.
Yeah.
This whole thing about, we don't want to confuse the kids. We don't want to, you know, they're not ready, you know, and all this stuff. Like, kids are very intuitive and very smart. They're not dumb. And, you know, we have this thing of, like, keeping things from them. I'm like, they understand things better than we do, you know.
And the damage that they're doing.
Children are...
As every day goes by, every year goes by, it's like you're doing more damage. You know, these are the people that you're supposed to be able to trust, absolutely 100%, and then gonna rock their world. You know,
listen, man, children are afraid of the dark. It's the adults that are afraid of the light, and you know that's the truth there. It's if you're afraid to tell your child something, you're afraid for some shameful reason inside yourself, and you need to go deal with that because you also need to be a parent to this child.
Yeah. And I admire my adoptive. I remember my adoptive father saying to me, you know, what kind of jerk would I be if I tried to keep your history from you? He said, that would say that I'm insecure. You know, yeah, that's what he said. He said,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I remember being a teenager. He said, I know you love us. You love me. You loved your mom. You love your stepmother. There's nothing we would do that, you know, where we wouldn't still be your parents. So they said, what kind of, I think he said asshole, but I don't think he's a jerk. I think he said, what kind of asshole would I be if I tried to keep you from your biological family? He said, that would mean that I am so insecure in our relationship, you know, and that's what I mean. When I talk about how enlightened my parents were, they really were like super evolved humans. They really were.
And how validating and empowering for you.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, this is who you are. We know who you are, and we love you so much, and we're going to, you know, embrace who you are. Otherwise, if they don't tell you and it's secrets, then are you ashamed of who I am?
Right.
It's just, I mean, we've already talked about this, but
Yep.
It drives me nuts.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because I just, well, I wish what I had, every adoptee would have, and I know they don't, you know. I feel like one of the very, very fortunate people. That isn't lost on me, but it's funny. I always assumed wrongly that more people had had really great experiences like I had, and with the adoption, you know,
yeah,
family. And wow, I'm finding my story was might be unique in that respect because my parents were just so forthcoming.
Yeah,
I mean, so
that's really special. Yeah, that's just really great. Yeah, and so we
please
go ahead,
please.
So with that, Kendall, and this is what I try to hammer home to with people trying to understand our situation. So with that, you and I had fantastic, you know, great experiences, you know, I mean, and maybe some complications like any other family, but overall, very fortunate, good experiences. Mm-hmm. Yet we still had the desire to know where we came
yes.
from, to know who our parents mm-hmm. were, to know our background, our culture, mm-hmm. our history. We still had that desire.
Right. And not because you wanted to erase your past.
Exactly.
No, I just have to have the whole story.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
My friend who was also adopted had just had no interest in learning anything. And I can't fathom that. Like, if you had the opportunity and you didn't take it, I don't get it. But that's just the way I'm built.
it is a scary thing. It is a scary thing to go, you know, to take that step to search. And it takes courage. Most people say, I want to wait until my adoptive parents die. Because the guilt is overwhelming. You know, they don't want to ruffle those feathers and, you know, experience maybe a second rejection from the adoptive side. But it is. It's a scary thing. It's not an easy thing to open up that box.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
But it's very healing. And, you know, we're a bridge to two tribes. You know, I have my biological family, I have my adoptive family, and we're that bridge between two tribes. And it's why should one? Yeah.
No, I agree with
exactly.
you. Yeah,
exactly.
I love it.
Well, Brian, thank you for being so generous with your time and with your story.
Oh, thank you.
It's been wonderful. And can't wait to get to meet you in person, too.
Yeah.
Brian's journey is imbued with emotion, unanswered questions, and ultimately, a newfound sense of identity and family. It may not have been easy, but it's beyond valuable, giving us all food for thought when it comes to family bonds, the power of truth, and our own personal identities. If Brian's story has resonated with you, feel free to explore other episodes where we touch on similar themes. As we're more than happy to generate a personalized playlist for you, just reach out. I, for one, cannot wait to meet Brian in person at the Untangling Our Roots conference in April in Denver. I hope he's a hugger because I'm coming in for a big one. But in the meantime, remember, family secrets are the ultimate plot twist. The Family Twist podcast features original music by Cosmic Afterthoughts, is presented by Savoir Faire Marketing Communications, and is produced by How the Cow Ate the Cabbage, LLC.